This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 108. Well, good day. Welcome to another episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'm an author of what I like to call fun fantasy reads. This podcast is exactly what we say it is in the show. It's a show where we focus on everything to do with fantasy and sometimes also sci-fi books, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, space opera, pure scientific sci-fi, you name it, we've got it here on the show. And our goal is to bring you the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the book world here to you to check out and find for your next best read. We'll do that coming up, but first off, I want to kick off with my own author update. Huntress Scout released earlier this week, and I'm really happy. Reviews are super so far. I'm really glad folks are liking it. Some actually made a comment to me that it's the best of the whole Huntress Clan saga. So book four, I guess if they keep getting better, that's a good thing. I'm really close in the meantime to finishing the writing on Huntress Adept, which is book five in the series, and hope to get that wrapped up and to the editor by the end of this month. In the meantime, you can get all of the first four books in the Huntress Clan saga and check that out. You can always get more information on everything I'm up to, including sneak peeks of upcoming covers, some special giveaway offers, and more by visiting my fan group on Facebook. That's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. Also over at my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you. I respond back to everybody that leaves a message or a comment or email for me. I just love hearing from readers. So if you want to check in, please do so. Okay, let's go ahead and get into this week's featured guest. I'm excited to have J. Clifton Slater on. He's a multi-genre author. His writing comes from a love of science and history, both of which feed his curiosity and his need to do research. Currently, he's working on book number 11 in the Clay Warriors series. His goal for that series was to make books about ancient Rome readable. And I have to say, he does a great job. I love that series of his. I guess I would call it fantasy just because it takes place in a more medieval, olden days time. Ancient warfare is like so much that we read in fantasy worlds. So you might want to check it out. The stories are wrapped around the events during the First Punic War in the mid-Republic years. He also has a science fiction series, Call Sign Warlock, about a retired Galactic Council Marine who has a bionic eye with six sensors. So he enjoyed researching medical sensors as part of that project. Let's go ahead and get into my interview with Jim Slater now, and you'll hear all about his love for research, his love for writing great, engaging stories, and how he brings it all together. Jim, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Jamie, it is exciting to be here on the Books and Author Fantasy Podcast. Of course, I'm J. Clifton Slater. I write military adventure, both future and ancient.
And that's just awesome, I have to say. I really enjoy the whole span of military fiction, whether it's, you know, ancient fiction, fantasy, military fantasy, military sci-fi. I'm in for the whole bucket. I enjoy every bit of it.
I like it because it satisfies a couple things for me. First of all, I was in the Marine Corps. I was in Vietnam. So I've got that experience. But ever since then, I've tried to figure out what the military mind is, how they function, the difference between the military and civilian. So for me, it's all been the books are a way for me to explore my feelings and how I'm thinking. Also satisfy something else. I love science and I love history. So when you put the two together, you end up doing futuristic and you end up doing ancient. So that's where I went. I'll give you an example of ancient technology that I just put in my last book, the book 11, as a matter of fact, in the series. It has to do with grinding grain. You got a mill. You got a mill, and you think, we all think of the iconic mill of the vertical wheel water wheel turning and all that. That didn't come about until probably 54 BC when they had the gears and levers to change the power from the spinning wheel down to a grinding wheel. Well, what they had before then was the horizontal wheel that laid in the water. So you have that going on. Now, the challenge is when you're writing ancient history and you try to describe that in a book, and it's just kind of part of the story, that's where it gets to be a little difficult sometimes. But it's, again, the research, the engineering, the reverse engineering of ancient technology is one of my great loves. So that's where we went with the ancient.
Well, and I'm reading Clay Legionary right now, and I'm really enjoying the story of Valerio Cicera, and, you know, his kind of his evolution story of this scrawny kid who's being bullied up into, you know, a sword prodigy, a fighting prodigy, which you explain very well at the very beginning of the chapter, first chapter, explaining the origins of the word prodigy.
I'm glad that was clear. I write the technology I put in the books isn't always clear because I don't highlight the technology. It just is. For instance, there are things in the first part of the book about farming technology, the taking cornmeal or bones of animals, grinding it up, and using it to enhance the soil. They don't say that in the books. His father talks about learning to, after a big battle, when a lot of people died, and they didn't go back to that field for another year, but when they did, it grew grass like somebody planted it. So that was exciting for them to, you know, how did you learn to farm? Well, it was after this big battle. The other thing is harvesting. It fascinates me, the harvesting of crops by hand. How would they do it? They'd have to have a conga line of people cutting, but then they cut. They have to pass it to somebody else. Then they have to put it in a wagon and take it to the thrashing things. One of the things we know musically, and that's one of the themes in all the books, is on book 11, I think I've written 29 songs or chants for those books. When you deal with rhythmically, there's a pace just above heart rate that the allows a group of people to work together for long periods of time, whether they're plowing a field, harvesting grain, pulling in a fishing net, the village working together. You can hear it, all this folk music all throughout the world of that.
Oh, yeah.
Steady
sails, the sea shanties, all that stuff, right?
Yeah. It's that little bit above heart rate that you can work for hours and hours and hours doing it. And that's where that comes from. So one of a warning to new authors that decide to do a series, be careful the formals that you give your characters. I made Alero sing badly. I get emails from readers that laugh and go, don't make me go Alero on you. You better get the next book out, which they mean is sing badly and fight. So I did that in the first book. And some of the songs, most of them are just basic pub drinking songs as far as the beat goes, the music goes. But some of them are fun. I mean, in one of the later books, if you keep going in a series, there's one, it talks about, you know, rowers and ancient galleys, you know, the trimenes and the quadrimenes and all those, they had their rowers stacked up. So I thought, boy, what a great song. If you were the middle rower on one of those on a Greek warship, you wouldn't be able to see anything. A guy above you is going, you know, he's sweating on you. You don't know what's falling. A guy in front of you has got back hair. He's disgusting. A guy behind you is blowing garlic breath on you. And a guy underneath you is threatening your life. If you do anything, sweat on him. What are you going to do? And you can't see anything. All you can see is a little bit out of the oar hole. You see a little blue water. So I wrote a song about that. So it's every song in a book has to do with, again, I try to take things that are going on. I don't highlight them in a book. They are just part of the story. And that's hopefully one of the strengths of the book is I don't beat people up with the ancient Roman technology, although it's there. I don't hammer people over the head with, I do get into the politics because the politics are fascinating, especially before the First Punic War. they were divided. Some people, some senators wanted to go to war and other senators don't. One of the books covers the first gladiator games. Blood to the ancient Romans was sacred. So what they would do is if somebody, nobleman died, they would have servants fight until one of them was cut and bleeding. And then they would say, okay, good, we've consecrated the ground. That'll help the deceased get into Hades. So what happened was up in Tuscany region, a legion actually got destroyed and the council general was killed, as well as a battle commander. So they were devastated. They had to send another legion up. That legion captured, that legion destroyed the city and took all the people and sold them into slavery. They transported the people down to Rome and they decided to have a public games instead of a private games. And it was the first actual gladiator games. And they made those guys fight to the death. And the winner got to go free. And the one who died. But I used that to do a whole political thing of one side wanted this group to win and one side. I know our character Olero had to train one side. And it's craziness when you get into that. When you take the research, wrap the story around it. Bernard Cornwell is my favorite author.
Oh my goodness. The Sharp novels. I'm obsessed with those. And you're right. It's that writing history in such a way that the modern reader can understand it and it's still part of the story. And anything else that's going on, you don't need to know how, you know, the horse is saddled or any of that stuff. But when it's important to the story, like how a rifle works, then they have it in there.
Bernard said in interviews that he says that when you're a historical fiction writer, you're writing inside a bubble. The big story is the history, but the real story you're writing is what's going on inside that circle. And you're touching on the history, but it's not really, you're not telling the history. You're just doing it. So the research you do for something like that is extraordinary. I've got reams of research everywhere. And then I look at the research and then I incorporate it in the story and then I forget the research to write the story. So it's fine. One of my aims of writing this series was to make ancient history accessible. I wrote the books for when I was 13, 14 years old. Yes, there's bloodshed. There's cursing, but I'm not comfortable writing cursing in books. So what I did was I went out and got Latin translations for all the normal curse words. So my character's friend of mine's 8-year-old son was reading them. And I said, Gary, you know, there are cursing in that book, right? There's bloodshed. There's cursing. There's no sex. There's no, you know, there's nothing intimate in there that's going to make somebody cringe, at least me at 13. Well, Gary said, his grandson said to him, hey, Pop, what's that word? He went, oh, it's a body part. Kid said, that's fine. He kept reading. So he didn't care. One of the challenges, years ago, I read a book called The Nature of Alexander by Mary Renault, which is a fabulous book that told the story of Alexander the Great. But she didn't do technical. Her battle scenes were kind of brushed over, but the book was fascinating. A character, she drew characters of him and his generals and all. And I use that as an example of saying, you don't need to have, you don't need to over-explain technology. It's there. You just do it. So I wanted to make the Roman story, at least the first Punic War before the Imperial, I wanted to make it accessible to everybody. So I used some modern ranks for Decanus was a director of a 10-person tent. I called him a lance corporal. The Tesaurus Aris, and I pronounced these really bad, and I apologize for that. But they were the person that handled the paperwork, and they were the guide on for a century. So I called him a corporal. Then there was the Optio, who was the senior enlisted person in the century. He's a sergeant, right? So again, sergeant, corporal, lance corporal, I'll call it good. Now, I got murdered by people that are really into the Roman legion theories and all that. They love the long, complicated ranks and all that. again, accessibility, I flattened the control structure. I just did it. At the time I'm writing about, it's the First Punic War. It's the mid-Republic period. You've got your legions are not full-time. You do have garrisons in regional areas, but there's no standing army. Every spring, when a new council, and they had two councils, co-councils, elected from the senators, they got to pick and raise an army. They raised two legions each. And if they needed to, if there was, they needed to defend something or attack something, then they would go do it. But at the end of the season, they disband the legion. So there was no full-time legion. So you think about it. The other thing in book one you'll see is his father teaching him weapons, right? That's what fathers did back then, because you didn't want your son to go into the legion and not have any experience with a weapon at all. So all that stuff gets rolled into there. So it's fun. There's no magic, but oh, there are so many Greek gods. I love Greek gods. I mean, Roman gods. My favorite is Colomus. And he's my favorite one. He comes up now and then, and he's the ancient Roman god of stupid. So when somebody does something wrong, Alero will go, "You must be blessed by Colomus."
We could use a god of stupid, you know, in modern times, I think, sometimes.
Isn't really that the truth? Isn't that the truth? But yeah, I didn't want to write over people's head. I wanted it to be a good story that follows Alero. I mean, he starts out, like you said, as a young, undersized kid being picked on. And he does grow into a legionnaire. He goes through training. And that's the one thing the legions did. Although at this period, they were levied legions, which meant they raised the legion every spring to do whatever campaign, and then they disbanded so the guys could go home and work on the farms, as most people were there.
A question for you, because you've talked about two of your three rules. But the third rule, which I think is one of the things that has hooked me in your book the most, is there must be choreography fights scenes.
Yes, the three rules I have is it has to be science before it's fiction, and it has to be history before it's story, and there must be choreographed action sequences. One thing I love is I do martial arts. I do my kata every morning. I do my Filipino stick fighting, Senawalis with fighting sticks. I do that every morning, helps center me, just get everything up and moving. And when you get to a certain age, if you don't get up and move, you may never get up again. So for me, I'm going to get up and move. What happens is when I'm writing, I always thought you're shortchanging the other because what is it? Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where they slow things down and you can see them on the wire. And I love the Hong Kong fight, Hong Kong Chop Suey movies. Just fabulous work slowing down to watch The Matrix, another one. They slow down, Neo is bending and the bullets are going by. And I always felt that sort of thing should be in a book as long as it's paced and moving properly. It's funny, some writers talk about audio cues where they have a music playlist they play when they're writing. Every series I write has a different album I listen to. Now, I have a fantasy series I just finished, a little two-book short one because I just wanted to do it. I listen to Cats, which is fun. But one of my sci-fi ones called Sign Warlock, I listen to Best of the Eagles. And for Alero's books, Clay Warrior Stories, I listen to Celtic Women, four-part harmony, female harmonies. They're just great. I do that because I have a creative mind. And just let me sit down for 5 minutes and I'll sketch out a short story for you. And when I'm working on a book, my mind cannot wander off and write short stories. It's not allowed to. It has to stay focused. So what I do is when I have downtime and my brain wanders and I need to be thinking about the book and the story, I think of a song from that album and it snaps me back in and focuses me back on what I'm writing on. So it's strange. My wife always knows I'm working on a Laro book because I got the Celtic women in the background singing away, and I'm loving it. So
there's something about the idea of ritual that makes writing work for so many people. I know it does the same thing for me. I have to get my drink, and I have to get my, have everything sitting there around me in just such a way. And then it's my playlist for whatever that book is that I've created. Interestingly enough, I mean, I'm writing this urban fantasy series about a young huntress,
I've got the initiate.
Yeah, you have the initiate. Okay.
I've got the initiate. Yeah, I just started it, but I'm trying to finish a book. As soon as it's done, I'm on that.
Well, for some reason, I've been listening to the best of the Doobie Brothers. Their two greatest hits albums. And you think, all right, wait, this band's from the late 70s and 80s. And I'm just like, nope, it's just the song that's getting my mind in the right place, that music. And then it disappears into the background.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And I'm not listening. I'm not singing along with the songs. It's just they're there and then they disappear and I'm in the story again.
And if you've got the kind of mind that wanders off and sees something like the next shiny object, like, oh, I'm going to write a short story about that because that's really cool. You go, no, I need to be thinking about my book. I don't need to be over here doing that. So, yeah. So the music cues for me help focus. It also helps me bring up the story when I need to later on while I'm working on a book to get it finished. Talking about my three rules, it has to be science before it's story. One of my series I mentioned a minute ago was Call Sign Warlock, which is about Diosa Albrecht, who's a Marine. She's a commander of a group that does corridor assaulting. When the Marines bog down against rebels on a ship and they can't get down a corridor, they call in her team and they go in. Well, she actually was in my first series, which is Galactic Council Realm. And she was hurt badly in that book. And last time you heard from her, she was being transported to a medical facility. Well, I parked her for over a year when I wrote that. I went on to write, started Laro, some other stuff. And she's in the back of my head going, I'm too good a character to let go. So I brought her back up and started with putting her back together. And again, I studied a bunch of medical technology. And one of the things is that the Marine Corps wants her, the Galactic Council Marine Corps wants her back in factory specs. Because one surgeon's going, hey, we can repair the leg and arm with the titanium, and the guy go, no, he's got to have factory specs. So they put a matrix in her, and then they put cells to regrow the bone. So, but those regrowth things are what happens later when she gets caught in an ion flow and her face shield's cracked and her right eye gets ruined and her optic nerve gets irradiated and starts pulsing. And they say, well, what are we going to do with that? Well, you could either pull the eye, pull the nerve so she can have some right, or we can go down, we can call down to the sensor department on the Navy ship and ask the sensor guy if he would put a sensor in an eyeball thing and we'll put it in and connect it to her. Well, if you know anything about the military, there are people that are really talented hidden away doing stuff. I mean, look at the power plant on submarines and the power plant on aircraft carriers. Those guys are not grease monkeys greasing up gears, right? They know the atoms are being split and all this stuff. So
right,
they get one of those guys down and he puts together six sensors in this eye and they put it in her eye. And when you're dealing with sensors, there's always a computer that analyzes it goes that. Well, she's just got a brain. So she's getting the raw data. So what they do is they fix it where none of the sensors come online until her mind discovers it. So for the first two books, her mind is discovering the things. But all the research I did to give her those six things. But my favorite's the Heller's organ. And Heller's organ is what ticks have. And I always mess this up. Yes, carbon dioxide. When an animal breathes out, they breathe out dark carbon dioxide. Ticks sense that and turn to the carbon dioxide. That's why when you walk through the woods, ticks are all ready to jump on you because they sense you're coming. Well, for her, between smelling the carbon dioxide, UV, a bunch of other things, she's like a human lie detector. So when people try to lie to her, she analyzes that. And again, the choreography of her analyzing who she's talking to. And also when she fights too, but that goes with the science part and research. So it extends from both the ancient to the future.
That's amazing. And I think people are really going to super enjoy your books. I like I said, I'm already hooked on Clay Warrior, the Clay Warrior stories and the Clay Legionary.
Thank you.
And I was looking at your author page and saw the Call Sign Warlock books. So I'm intrigued by that, but I didn't know there was books before that. So I'm going to have to read those first. but anyway, Jim, you know, thanks so much. Real quick before we go, when you have people that read your books and they want to reach out to you, you've mentioned a couple of times that folks get in touch with you by email and whatnot. How's the best way for them to catch up with you?
Well, there's obviously to find out about the books, Amazon, my Amazon page is always good. J. Clifton Slater. My email is galacticcouncilrealm@gmail.
Okay.
galacticcouncilrealm@gmail. I answer all my mail. I love getting mail from people, good, bad, or another. I get some hate mail because I write bad poetry. I have Twitter is @CRealm. Galactic Sea Realm, because I couldn't get Council in there. And Facebook is Galactic Council Realm and Clay Warrior Stories. But if you type in Galactic Council Realm on Facebook, it'll come up. One of the things I do historical ponderings, which is my thoughts on different parts of the culture back in ancient Rome. And I do those because I have so much research that I can't put it in the books that I just go ahead and do a piece. One of my favorites I did was the Q score for ancient gods. Q score is what marketing people use to decide if a company is well known or if a personality is well known. So I did that. What is the likely ancient Q score for the ancient Roman gods and goddesses? And I said, okay, you got city, who would be big? Jupiter's big in the city, right? Because they're big, everybody passes by the big temple, that's cool. But if you're in the legion, it's probably going to be Mars, because that's warrior god. Okay, that he's more, Jupiter's good, but you know, Mars is more important. But if you're a farmer, it's going to be the god of boundaries, or it's going to be the god of the soil. So what god would be top Q score for ancient Rome? And I came down to it. It's the ancient Roman god of poo. Because it would go from the city to the country to the legion, right? Everybody has, as a matter of fact, Rome built a temple to them. It's one of the oldest sewer systems in the world, right? Under the city of Rome, they built a sewer. So I consider that a temple to the god of poo. So he won the Q score.
That's great. Well, Jim, thanks for coming on the show. We'll have to get you back on here at some point in the future when you have something else coming out. I know you mentioned you got a new fantasy short series you put together. So maybe we down the road, we can talk about that.
That'd be great.
You and I can talk about stuff all day long because we've been together for a little while now. And whenever we're together, we start talking. So
I know. It's great. All right, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming on, and we'll have you back soon. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy and sci-fi focus community on Facebook and as over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also, while you're over there, if you're listening to this episode, right there below the audio player at the top of the page, you will see links to subscribe to the show, whether it's on a mobile app, on iOS or Android, or even by email. But you'll want to do that because you don't want to miss any of the upcoming episodes. We've got some great authors coming, including our next episode with author Martin Alton. You won't want to miss that one. He's a lot of fun to chat with, and I enjoyed talking with him about his writing and his books. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books or at my reader page over there, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, where you can always catch up with me and leave a comment if you want to touch base. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, don't forget to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.